This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Hello, and welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to join us on today, and welcome to those of you that are joining us for the first time. We just completed our series where we were talking about sinister traits that are active in the world of UX, things that have been normalized that should not exist at all, things that people think are fine and dandy and okay. These things, we have to expose them. We want to put them on people's radar. We want people to wake up. We want people to be in a better position. We want to try to foster more health in the discipline, which we are grossly lacking today. At the end of that series, I spent one more week just talking about what I refer to as the top 10, just 10 that just stood out the most to me. You may feel differently about yours with that list. That's all fine and dandy. That's just my perspective, and you may have a different perspective. You may see some different things. That's all fine and dandy. The thing is, those things need to cease. They are happening way too often, and we are suffering as a discipline because of that. Now we segue, as we often do, at the end of a series. We just have a potpourri week. So it is potpourri week, folks, where we are just spending time looking at things that are just common things that are happening right now, hot topics, things that are just bubble up to the front of our mind, something that happened on social media that just stood out that we're just going to give attention to. Just a week to just almost like fireside chat it a bit, even though it's just me in this particular fireside chat. But we just want to talk about some things and just share them with you, give you again some perspectives. And then we move on into our anniversary. We are about to experience our fourth anniversary with the World of UX podcast. We are excited to have been bringing this information to you over the course of these 4 years, bringing top-notch people to you to share their input, their perspectives, their wisdom, their knowledge, their gold, if you will. Again, all for the purpose of vaulting the discipline forward. And so we're going to have some nice, interesting guests and content that will be available in the not-too-distant future. And we look forward to having those people on. It's been a blast. We've already done some of the shows, but we just have not produced them yet. But we will share them. We're saving them for anniversary, and then we'll have some little special things that we want to present in conjunction with that, with those sessions. But let's go ahead and dive in, shall we? We are going to look at, what do I have here today? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 potpourri topics that we want to share with you on today. Let's get going. Potpourri topic number 1 for today has to do with the extreme fallibility of design exercises. And this is one of the things that's happening when it comes to people that are trying to find jobs. People will, of course, people fill out applications, people will submit a portfolio link. Some people, they don't want to rely on a portfolio to gauge talent, and so they feel that they are doing something a little bit more responsible and a little bit more dependable by subjecting people to design exercises. But just as is the case with portfolios, design exercises are all over the place. The things that they ask people to do, how they ask people to take, they ask people to take things home with them. Some people ask you to do things on the spot. Some people actually present a real scenario, thinking that something that's more close to home is going to help them to understand whether or not a person is a fit. But design exercises are subject to the same foibles, the same issues, the same sinister traits that we've been talking about. And they are, unfortunately, they're for the most part, design exercises do not work. They don't help people to evaluate talent the right way. And so we just want to share a few tidbits with you about design exercises. Some of these are based on one scenario I just went through recently, and just some other things I've experienced in the past and some additional feedback I have received from people with regard to their experiences with design exercises. It's not a good thing right now. And a lot of times the design exercises are going to render inaccurate and undesirable results because it's garbage in, garbage out. And the garbage in, garbage out has nothing to do with the applicants. The garbage in, garbage out that I am speaking of has to do with the people who design the exercises, but we'll get to that in just a moment. So consider the following. Design exercises, in order for them to work, they're not a bad idea. I have actually had my most refreshing and most enriching experiences when I've sought jobs in my career where I engage in some type of a discussion that or some type of a design exercise where we got to the point where we talked shop and we got practical, and I was able to demonstrate my passion. I was able to demonstrate my knowledge, my skill, my acumen based on what we were doing. But it depends on whether or not there was a garbage in component instead of something that is going to generate garbage out. Because if people have garbage that they present during what really is supposed to amount to an assessment process, if the people who are responsible for designing the design exercises, if they don't know how to actually create an assessment, and remember the key word is assessment, if the people behind it do not know how to create an assessment, and or the people who are doing the evaluations have no idea how to assess UX talent, the same problem that plagues our issues with portfolios today, garbage is going to come out of that review. It's going to come out of that design exercise because people design something that just is sad. It's really, really sad. I recently went through a design exercise, and first when I heard there was going to be a design exercise, I sort of cringed a little bit because I know the problems associated with design exercises, and I've been doing the work for 28 years. What do you really expect to learn or not learn? It's when somebody else, and this happens with portfolios are not going to reveal to you what somebody brings to the table when they've been doing this work for a long time. They're only potentially going to reveal something to you if the person just got going in UX because it lets you know how they think. What happens a lot of times is, number one, people, the average UX reviewer automatically discriminates against people that have been in the discipline for a long time. They are very anti-seniority. They want to displace us. They want all of us to disappear. They want to pull a Thanos and snap their finger and every senior person disappears and they want to become the new senior people. They have inferiority complexes. They are just threatened by us. And so they look for excuses. And some of you don't know this because you haven't been there yet. I'm telling you, other people who are in my shoes will tell you the same thing. They're looking to get rid of us because they see us as totally irrelevant. And they feel like the discipline will get where it's going with their leadership. And that simply isn't the case. We see what's happening with their leadership now because those are the people calling most of the shots these days. Seniors in shoes such as myself, we're not calling shots today because we've already been displaced. We've already been cast aside, as we talked about during the Sinister series. But when you have these people who don't know how to design assessments, and we'll stay with that for a few moments, actually. When you have people who don't know how to evaluate UX talent, just like they do with portfolios, when you take those same people and you put them in the scenario where they're designing the design exercises, they're leading the design exercises, that's not going to pan out well. It's going to render results to tell you that that person can't do what they actually can do, because it's going to be chock full of bias. It's, as we said, they're looking to displace these people and looking for excuses. The design exercise I went through, the thing that was so bad about it, on one hand, when I was done, they asked me for feedback and they asked me what I thought about the design exercise, which is pretty interesting because they weren't going to listen to what I said anyway. But when somebody gives you a design exercise, are you really going to critique it? Or are you going to play the cards you've been dealt and try to do your best with it? which should have shown that you're willing to roll with something that may or may not be the best scenario for you to be in. So it says something about character, but are they looking for that? No, they don't have a clue. They don't know the importance of character to UX. So that's where they have one of those deficiencies, but they simply cannot really evaluate people the way that they think they can. So now you got people with Dunning-Kruger trying to decide whether or not you are who you say you are, when there's no way for you to not be who you say you are at this kind of level. But at any rate, it's really funny that they asked me for feedback. You're not going to critique it. You're not going to tell them exactly what you think, because that's not going to bode well. You already weren't going to bode well because of the exercises they put forth. And in this particular situation, these people do work for government entities, of which I have no experience with. I've never done any work with a government entity, and they know that. They already have your information. They already have your resume. They already have everything about you you've ever done. They know it, and so they know you've never done any government work. So if you had never done any government work, do you know how things work in the government? No, you don't. So now they're going to judge you. What it boils down to is they're going to evaluate you based on your ability to read minds. That's what it boils down to. And here's what's really terrible and discriminatory about it. If you knew what they knew, you would respond the way they respond when you've been doing this for a long time. We always roll with the punches. We always acclimate. We always morph. That's something you learn how to do. That's one of the things people who've been in UX a long time can do that people who have not been in UX a long time cannot do. We always will change. We'll pull a chameleon move, and we'll move and we'll shift based on what's needed to survive and thrive and deliver value in those set situations. If somebody had been in UX a long time, they know you could do that. If they don't have not been in UX a long time, they're not going to give you that benefit of the doubt in such cases as where I was, and they're going to automatically see you as somebody who can't do X, Y, and Z, which isn't even remotely accurate or possible. But again, that's what happens when the tables are flipped and people with no experience evaluate people who do have experience. They make assumptions that are not true. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that. It's something that's common, and it happened to me in this particular situation. So they will, if you have been around for a while, for some reason, they think that means you can read minds. That's not true. And then they're going to come across somebody who also has no idea, who's also going to do the same type thing, but they decide to give that person a mulligan and not hold that against that person because they could not read minds. And it's just another one of those discriminatory things that happens in UX. And it really, in some cases, it amounts to a lynching. Because these people are keeping more experienced people from generating a livelihood. They're taking the freedom of generating a livelihood away from us because we're experienced. And there's something extremely sinister. I can't get off of that sinister thing right now. But it's actually demonstrating the sinister mindset behind their operation today. That's really, really sad. But back to assessments. I said I was going to stick with that assessment thing for a minute because I want to point something out. Here's somebody trying to assess, person A trying to assess person B. In my particular case, you're trying to assess somebody who does assessments for a living. Basically, I do it in my UX practice, but I also do it because I'm an educator. I know how to create an assessment. I know how to create an exercise that will allow me to understand, give the person an opportunity to demonstrate their knowledge, their skill, their acumen, and then I have the ability to evaluate how well they did that. When people who do not know the purpose of an assessment, don't know how to create an assessment, have no experience in creating assessments, are put in a position to lead the charge with an assessment, there is no way, and by no way, it means that, you know, a blind squirrel can always find a nut, but when it comes to basic operation, they simply can't do it. They don't know anything about assessments, and that's what happened in my situation. I did not read anybody's mind. I demonstrated my knowledge. I even made a statement once, and I talked about changing the information architecture because there was no information sent in the information architecture in what I was evaluating at all. And I made a recommendation to change the information architecture. Now, somebody who's been trained in information architecture knows that. But one of the people, the person who was the UX person on this evaluation team, told me that from what they've seen, information architecture can take months to change. From what I understand, from what I was told, that applies, that is true when it comes to government work. But I wasn't supposed to be responding in the exercise based on how government work occurs. I have no knowledge of it. I was basing it on what I knew to be true. I was basing it on what I knew to be heuristics and best practices, not on how they do their work. Here's the hypocritical thing about this. The three people who were evaluating me, none of them had experience before they came into that situation. And had they known what I knew, they would have responded the same way. It's amazing how people, and I've seen this a lot over the course of my career, they know nothing before they come into a situation. And then when other people that they encounter who know nothing coming into a situation, they have a tendency to judge them as if they already know the scenario, the culture, the surroundings, when they had to learn it as well. It's really hypocritical, and it's crazy how rampant this type of a mindset is. And again, I had the ability to generate and make a living taken away from me because of someone else's isms, because of someone else's biases, because of someone else's lack of empathy, because of someone else's jaded and unrealistic perspective. That's really what it boils down to. These things are happening too much, and a lot of people are being judged improperly and inaccurately when they're trying to apply for jobs, when they're interviewing for jobs. There are people who are brought into this process that don't have an ounce of equitability in their heart. And when these types of things happen, the wrong people get hired, which is one of the things that's plaguing us today. This is happening all over the place. So at any rate, anytime you have people that are leading a charge like this, you can't have any neophytes involved. The people have to be fair. And I didn't experience it, and I've had that happen way too often in my career, actually. And when you reach my level of seniority, what's going to happen is you're only going to be able to go to a company where people actually know something about UX. They have to be a little bit more mature in the discipline, because the less mature companies, they're not going to treat people fairly, and they don't appreciate expertise. They don't have any in-house, so they're not going to appreciate any. And they've been operating for God knows how many years without any expertise. It's really sad and strange today, but hopefully things will turn out better. But here's the good thing, the good side of it. I'd rather not go to a company like that, because if they treat you, every company that treats you bad, treats you unfairly during the interviewing process, they're going to treat you bad once you come in. So if that's what was waiting for me after I came on board, by no means do I want to go with that company. So I'm happy that that did not work out, as strange as it may seem. And I talk to people frequently, and they say, you know, when you don't have a job, you're ready to accept anything. And they're saying it like, I mean, I understand. I know the plight. I also know what happens when you go into those crazy companies, when you go into those toxic companies. I know what's going to happen once you go in there, and you're better off collecting unemployment. As terrible as unemployment is, you're better off collecting unemployment for a little while longer than you are going into a company that's going to detrimentally impact your health, that's going to cause you to lose sleep, that's going to cause you to pull your hair out. You're better off. So thank God we didn't go into that scenario. It's really, really funny. But at any rate, In a lot of these cases, biases and discrimination, they're guaranteed to abound. So, you know, who lost out? Did I lose out or did they lose out? Yep, they lost out. That's the way that it works. Topic number two. I saw a discussion on LinkedIn, and these types of things pop up from time to time. And the person means well in what they did, but there are people who just frequently engage in extremely irresponsible banter but they're so clueless, they don't know that it's irresponsible. And so I saw a situation where someone was asking people who graduated from boot camps or attended boot camps their thoughts about their boot camp experience. And while I understand in general asking them how it went for them, what they thought, that there is an element of merit to that, there's also an element of irresponsibility associated with it. And here's why I say that. If you had no experience in UX and you went to a boot camp, and we've all seen what people who went to boot camps have to say after the fact. You've seen the results be and the feedback be really all over the chart, all over the landscape. It's everywhere from my experience was fantastic and it got me started to, man, I gave them all that money and I really got nothing out of it. The people who say that they got nothing out of it are actually your more critical thinkers. And a lot of times they've been exposed to people who are really calling out the foibles and the corruption and the predatory nature of boot camps. And then they look back on in retrospect, coupled with that critical thinking and the feedback they've received from other people. And they say, you know what? You're right. This did happen. That did happen. And this didn't happen. And that didn't happen. You're absolutely right. What a waste of time. What a waste of money. And the people who say that, well, a boot camp gave me a great start, don't realize that you could have gotten the same exact start for free just by doing searches on the same topics on the internet, because the stuff that they're covering in the boot camps is available for free on the internet. You don't have to pay $8,000 to $25,000. You don't have to let somebody take money out of your first few paychecks to pay for something that they've sold you that was really packaged based on what somebody else had. There are no sound ethics associated with boot camps, no matter how anybody spends it. And folks need to just face that. They need to face that fact today. But the main point that I got out of this question, the thing that struck me when I saw it more recently, was that when you ask people who went to boot camp, and for the purpose of this, I'm calling them boot campers, and that's what I'm going to start calling them, is boot campers. When you ask a boot camper the thoughts about their experience, nobody seems to be considering the fact that boot campers do not have the experience. They don't know enough yet to really judge what happened to them. They don't know. And the mere fact that they're trying to tell you how good it was is part of that Dunning-Kruger infection that took place. You think you're qualified? Have you ever gone to see a doctor and had a doctor treat you, and then somebody asks you your thought about that trip to the doctor, and then go back and revisit your feedback 2, 3, 4, 5 years later and realize how jaded your feedback was? You really didn't know what the doctor was supposed to do. You really didn't know what the doctor was talking about. You learned about it later. Have you ever had a child tell you which babysitter they like better? And see that their feedback is actually coming from, as in the case with the example I just gave, the metaphorical situation I just provided. When somebody is uninformed, when a child tells you that they like babysitter A better than babysitter B because they had more fun with babysitter A, when the truth of the matter is that babysitter B was more disciplined and held the child accountable to stuff, so the child didn't like the fact that they were being restricted from doing dumb things. And so they had more fun. Kids always think dumb stuff is fun. And that same kind of mindset applies to this. Boot campers do not know how to evaluate their experiences. They don't know that all the topics that they were presented with were just scratching the surface. They don't know that they weren't presented with fundamentals in enough of a way to lay enough of a sound foundation to go forward. Matter of fact, a lot of boot campers will tell you that it gave me a great start. Really? I still have yet, and really maybe two, of all the boot campers I've ever been exposed to in my career, there have only been two that I've worked with that were not responsible for me losing sleep. There have only been two that I've worked with that were not a source of pain and frustration and rework. There's no way around any of this. No entry-level person, whether they went to a boot camp or not, no entry-level person is going to come through the door generating a bunch of value. There's way too much to learn. They have to onboard the culture. They have to onboard with the work. They have to onboard with the relationships. God help you if the person had a visual design background because they think that they're going to deliver a bunch of aesthetic stuff, not knowing that UX lives beneath the presentation layer the vast majority of the time. And so they come in doing visual design stuff. And yeah, somebody will tell them that they did great work. Did a real UX person tell you that you did something great? They don't understand, and people are not accountable to the excellence factors associated with the discipline, and then trying to sell people on their perception as if it's authentic. It's not. And it's not until people's perception of the discipline becomes actually and verifiably authentic that their perspectives and how they tend to reminisce and their opinions, trying to think of the right words here, it's not until that opinion, because remember, there's expert opinion and then there's general opinion. Anybody passing by could have an opinion, but what does the expert have to say about it? That's where everybody really needs to be examining themselves. That's where you really need to compare yourself, because until you really know what you're talking about, and we all know this, why we're trying to let people get away with this in UX is beyond me. Until you really know what you're talking about, what you're saying doesn't really mean a whole lot. It really doesn't. It's not really helping anybody to be grounded, but yet people can get an amateurish perspective and think that they've arrived. The boot camps will tell you that you can learn everything you need to know about UX in 6 months. You believe it, which is why you gave them $8,000 to $25,000 or allowed them to take part of your paycheck. You had to be sold that snake oil and be told that the snake oil was good in order to opt in. The snake oil is never good. And so people need to start facing up to that. But I mean, goodness, people at boot camps, they're infected with a strong sense of Dunning-Kruger. They're infected with a heightened sense of bias. They're infected with IKEA effect bias, most notably. They think that because they're associated with the boot camp, they see the boot camp as being able to do no wrong whatsoever. And they couldn't be further from the truth with that. Folks who go to boot camps, whether you like it or not, are infected with tunnel vision. They're so happy that they have a check that they think that because they got a check, the boot camp must be good. Even malpracticing doctors get checks. Malpracticing teachers get checks. Malpracticing fill in the blank gets checks. That doesn't mean you're qualified because you're getting a check. It means you're getting a check. That's all that means today. People say that the Google program gave them a great start. Oh God, if the boot camps are allowing you to or presenting stuff and you think it's a good start and you could have searched for it, what do you think happens with the Google program where there's absolutely no feedback whatsoever from instructors? So that doesn't even qualify as an actual genuine learning experience, but people think that they got a good start. Do a search for the four pillars in Google or DuckDuckGo or Bing or whatever your choice of search engine is today. Do a search on information architecture. Take the top 10 articles and go dig into them, except anything that you see on Medium. Don't look at anything you see on Medium, which is mostly, for the most part, it's a cesspool. Go and look up things about UX research. Look at what you find. Dig into it. Look up things about heuristics and usability. Dig into it. Look up things about interaction design principles. You can go through that for the next 6 months, spend $0 unless you decide to buy some books, and you'll come out way ahead, further along without any of the aforementioned infections that you get when you go to a boot camp. So boot camping is dangerous, and just because some people are getting a job still does not validate. It does not justify the source. And folks, some folks have learned that and they're trying to tell folks that, but folks don't always want to listen to them. At any rate, that's topic number two. On to topic number three. There is a huge downshift in qualifications right now in UX. It's really scary. And what I mean by that is the time that appears to be required to be qualified for a particular role has drastically reduced. I've never seen it like this. It's just in the last 2 months or so, I've seen lead positions. I've seen manager positions. I've seen UX director positions. I've seen manager and director positions where they're asking for someone with a year of experience. That's downright insane. And that tells you that the organization hiring for those positions doesn't understand what it takes to do UX. It also is a sign that they're going to just bring somebody in to hold a spot. They're not really coming in to do UX work, and they have no intention on having people do real UX work. I saw a post just today where a company was hiring for a lead UX designer, and they wanted only like 3 or 4 years experience. You know how long it takes to be a real UX lead? We're talking 12 to 15 years of experience. And that has to be obtained not just at one company, but that's across a person's career. That's working at multiple organizations, because that's the only way a person is going to get the perspectives that they need in order to really manage themselves and what's going on with a practice within a given organization. But do you think companies know that? Nope, don't know it. Don't care to know it. Not going to know it. So the prior path to seniority was roughly this. 0 to 3 years is entry level. Now they're asking for people with entry level experience to function as directors and managers and leads. This is absolutely ridiculous. 3 to 6 years, roughly, was your mid-level UXer. About that, 3 to 6, 3 to 7. It's not until you get beyond 7 years that you could even think about being called a senior. Now people are getting senior titles with less than a year of experience. And they're not seniors. Even if you have the senior title, you are not a senior. That's just not the way that the discipline works. And then you have your leads, you have your principals, you have your staff UXers, and that's all beyond the 10 to 12 year range. Anything beyond that, you have to get in that arena before you could even remotely be considered for one of those roles. Now, if that was still the case, instead of this dysfunctional landscape that we have today, then people who are more senior, people who are more seasoned, people who have been laboring for years to reach that level, only to today be cast off in favor of somebody who brings nothing to the table. This is dangerous stuff, because it's going to render the discipline as being ineffectual. Is going to render the discipline as being irrelevant, because these people, when they come into these roles, they're not going to bring any value, let alone the value that's in alignment with the position they've been hired to. So this is really scary stuff today, completely dysfunctional. And again, the dysfunctional path has resulted in the discarding of people who previously worked to achieve this. So they're all sitting out here. I see them all the time. And they're sitting out there trying to find positions, and people will say they're overqualified, or they say, we don't want to pay them. They have 10 years. They have 15 years. We don't want to pay them. You don't know what people who've been working that long are willing to be paid. I mean, people who've been working for 3 or 4 years, and sometimes not even that long, are getting $120, $130, $150, $180, $200,000 a year, and they know nothing. They're entry-level UXers. So all of this stuff, people are happy to get the check, but they don't understand what's going to happen to the discipline with regard to getting that check. And that's where we suffer today. At any rate, on to topic number 4. Barrier of entry. This is something I was having a conversation with somebody recently. We were talking about some of the things happening in the discipline today, similar to what I was just mentioning with our third topic about the downshift and qualifications. But let me take you on a little bit of a history tour. And earlier in UX, the barrier of entry, in order to get into UX, you had to really confirm that you were qualified. And you would confirm you were qualified by people who knew how to evaluate you. We didn't have all this little fishy stuff, and where you have people who somebody gave them a chance, and now they want to give other people a chance. So all they do is give chances, and they get in the way of actual qualified people. It's interesting how all of that's been flipped today. But the barrier of entry was very high. You didn't have all these tools you have today, which with regard to Figma and Sketch and different tools like that. And of course, not Axure. That's why a lot of people today who are posers, retrofits, and upstarts, you don't find these people using something like Axure, because Axure is used to generate actual, really micro interactions associated with the user experience. You want to see these people who are using Figma and XD and all these kind of tools with a very low barrier of entry and are really revolving around doing that presentation layer stuff, that has lowered the barrier of entry. But the barrier of entry was high 12 to 15 years ago. The barrier of entry was high. Now it's almost non-existent. I mean, before, it guaranteed the quality of your applicants. Today, because there is no barrier of entry, everyone and their mother, as we tend to say, everybody can get in. The entrants used to have to up their game back in the day. Today, entrants don't have to do anything. That's why you have people that are willing to subscribe to the fake it till you make it mindset, because they know that they can fake it, not be held accountable for faking it, get a role that they didn't deserve, get a role they don't qualify for, being given to them by somebody who has no idea how to evaluate talent. And the whole thing is just upside down. You know, nobody complained about gatekeepers 15 years ago. It's people who cannot really present themselves properly to a quote unquote gatekeeper, who know that they can't qualify, who know they cannot meet the requirements of the gatekeeper, that complain about the gatekeepers. They're not as upset about gatekeepers as they claim to be. They just want to be able to get somewhere with lower barrier of entry. They want to be able to get somewhere without being able to do as much. They want to get somewhere in some cases without doing anything at all. Nobody balked 15 years ago because somebody asked them to learn or demonstrate their expertise with regard to fundamentals. People are doing that today because they're not learning fundamentals. They don't care about fundamentals. Nobody's holding them accountable to fundamentals. Nobody got sensitive 15 years ago when somebody presented them with constructive criticism. But they're doing it today because you have so many neurotic people that they think that you're stomping on them when you give them some constructive criticism. But constructive criticism is what makes us be better. It helps us to raise our game. It helps us to up the ante. It's critical, important stuff. Just really sad today. So the barrier of entry, if we are going to restore UX to its former glory and to its former value proposition, the barrier of entry needs to be restored to a higher position. And there's a lot of us out here working to do that. More to come on that at another time. Let's move on to our final topic today. For today's final topic for this potpourri segment, we just want to chat for a couple minutes about AI, artificial intelligence. I did a couple shows recently, and this is a hot topic. Everybody knows AI is a hot topic, but I don't think I've said a lot about this. And what I want to do is bring somebody on the show who can speak at length about artificial intelligence, because I'm not very immersed in it. I don't have a need to be. I'm going to start learning more about AI. I'm going to vault myself forward with regard to it. I'm going to dive in with regard to it. I think it's important. I think that it's going to become more and more valuable as they produce better AI resources, because today it's they're spitballing today, and it's, you don't know if and when you can trust AI. It's in its infantile stages at the level of which, I mean, when it comes to being paralleled with the hype today, it's not, the quality and the value prop is not the same as the hype. And so we have a problem, and we need to be very sensitive to that, and we need to be very careful regarding that today. But just a few tidbits about AI. Number one, it's just a tool. Remember that. AI is just a tool, just like everything else that we use to help us to get the work done. AI is a tool, and it should be treated as such. It is not going to replace anyone. AI cannot do our job. AI is only capable of doing work that is in alignment with the finite science aspects of user experience work. It cannot handle anything that has to do with infinite science. Anything that revolves around having your head on a pedestal, anything that revolves us to pivot or swivel, anything that gives a variable that can change at the drop of a hat, AI can't handle it. It can only handle things that are very structured, very methodical, things that are very cut and dry. AI can address those things. It can't address a lot of other things today. So, but because it's a tool, because it's something, it's beyond the horizon now. It's here. AI is here, and some people are using it. Someone was asking about, hey, you know, can't you use it to help when you're analyzing research data? Can't you just use AI to speed that process up? And the answer to that is yes, you can. But don't think that, because you got a lot of lazy people in UX today too, who always want something that'll do our work for us, and they don't understand if AI could do our job, we're all out of work. But it can't. And because you got to understand the mindset of business folks, they don't need you to be there. They just want the work to get done. AI cannot do everything that, especially a well-trained UX person, can do. And when it comes to, back to the point about analyzing data, when it comes to analyzing research data, even if and when AI analyzes some data, because there is still a high error rate, you still have to go back and double check that work. So there's always something for us to do when it comes to the whole AI workflow component. Anything that AI is going to do, it needs us there to hold its hand and to do stuff. So keep that in mind. Remember, it's artificial intelligence, which I like to think of as an oxymoron. It's programmed. It's an extension of whoever programmed it. It's not flawless. It is quite flawed today, with error rates up to 85%. I almost said 50, up to 85% of some instances were found to be erroneous. I've seen ChatGPT do things that were actually erroneous, and you just laughed about it. I don't use AI to do my work. I don't trust it. I don't need it. I call it a crutch. I don't need a crutch. I'm not handicapped. So this is something that we need to look at, and we need to handle it properly and not be gullible. But the naivety that is running rampant in UX today, it's a sinister trait that we didn't spend any time really talking about, but it is a problem today. And there's too many naive, toxically positive people who are just thinking everything is cotton candy and flowers and bunny rabbits, so to speak. And that's not the case. So we need to be careful about that today. Also, there's a lot of free courses, a lot of certs available. And because there's a lot of people who are already claiming to be experts in AI, it's funny how people are claiming to be an expert in something that just reared its head above the surface of the water, so to speak. I take that stuff with a grain of salt. Instead, you have places like MIT offering courses in AI. You have IBM offering free courses in AI. Find reputable courses, reputable resources addressing artificial intelligence, and tap into those. Make it a point to learn. It's still in its infantile stages. AI is. Learn something about it now. Don't just get left in dust. Learn something about it, but it's not as reliable as a lot of people are touting it to be. And a lot of the people who are touting AI's reliability are usually making money off of you buying into that hype. So don't do that. But you have the resources. Go and take these courses. Go and get these certs. Learn what you can about AI. You can actually try to innovate yourself. How can I use this to improve how I do my work? Keep experimenting. Play around with it. Find out what can be done. But don't buy into the hype blindly, because that's going to come back. It's going to bite you if you do. And remember, just as misinformation abounds in UX circles, oh, there's no shortage of misinformation when it comes to artificial intelligence. So let's have our head on straight. Remember, we work in a discipline that revolves around critical thinking. So let us abound in critical thinking today, and we'll all be better off for it. And folks, that is it. That is the end of this Potpourri segment. Thank you for taking the time to join us on today. We're going to get into the anniversary episode starting next week, but Until next time, it's time to sign off. This is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, wishing everyone all the best. And until next time, happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.